Asia Wide Hits 24/7. This is Asian Pop Radio. Thanks for clicking on another podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search for Asian Pop Radio. If you can rate and review, that would be totes awesome. Don't forget you can download our app. It is free via the App Store on iOS and Android, so you can hear Asia Wide Hits 24/7. Asia Wide Hits 24/7. This is Asian Pop Radio. We are crossing to Malaysia right now, to KL to be precise, and speaking to Chanel Devar. So, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Tell us a little bit about you, because, yeah, before we hit record, we were talking all about me, which was great. Don't get me wrong, because I can't do it enough. But, yeah, where did you get started in the world of music? So, when did you first, I guess, have an interest in music?
I grew up all the way in Sabah, which is like an island off the coast.
Yep.
Yeah, Borneo, yeah, that's a cooler word, Borneo. Then I think at about 15, 16, I started playing guitar. I took it up seriously when I saw Silverchair on the TV.
Oh, there you go.
Moved to KL when I was about 17, 18. So it's basically the same, like moving from Maryland to New York.
Right.
That sort of thing.
Yep.
Made a band in college, released an EP. Everyone graduated, went solo for a bit, released an EP. Realized I couldn't tour with the EP solo, so got a new band. And since then, two albums, one EP, and working on the next single because I ran out of money to make another album.
Well, that's always the challenging part, isn't it? So what
the financing part.
What was it about Silverchair that got you so interested?
It just looked cool, man.
Yeah.
It was, I think it was, they were Channel V Artists of the Month. Greatest View, after the whole like sort of 1 year bout of not being able to promote the album because of the arthritis. But
yeah,
it was a cool video. And then from then I went backwards. And then when I started playing in school, no one knew Silverchair that much. So I had to learn Nirvana. But it was the other way for me.
Right.
Silverchair first, then Nirvana.
Amazing. Daniel Johns, obviously, you know, when he first came out on the scene with the group, like they all seemed such extroverts and always out there and really edgy. And then it became apparent that he was a rather quiet person and behind the scenes. Didn't really like a lot of media or anything like that. They're a fascinating group. Are there particular...
Yeah, solo stuff now is all right. I'm still trying to digest it, but it's good. I mean, it could be worse.
True. So, I mean... As someone that likes to perform and dedicates their life to music, if it was an ideal situation and you were in a group and, you know, would you be aspiring to be in a group and have everything go your way and have success? Or do you feel that you really aspire to being a solo artist and having sort of that creative control and ownership over things?
I'd rather be in a group. It's a lot nicer because in the end of the day, on stage, it is always nice to have someone next to you also shouting their lungs out on the top of their lungs. It doesn't need to be like a permanent same set of group. It can be like different people in different states.
Yeah.
But it's never nice being on stage alone. It's too egoistical, I feel.
But at the same time, like, I guess there's room for stuff-ups there, isn't there? If you're the only one there, you can't really blame it on anyone.
Yeah. It's like golf. When you play solo, it's like golf. You can sit there, you can stand there, you can do all your practice swing. And if you mess it up, you have nothing to blame. You checked the wind, you checked everything, you chose your own club and you hit it and you did it wrong. Now, if it's a team sport, like a band, and you're playing football, like you say, that guy passed it slow.
Yeah.
It was all going too fast,
So, I mean, when you are on stage and when you are performing on your own, I guess you have to be really more so in tune with what the audience is wanting. If you're in a group situation, then, you know, you're kind of doing your own thing and people just kind of have to work with a group, right?
I think either way, you still have to try and connect to the audience. In Asia, that's quite hard, connecting to the audience.
Yeah.
The audience don't really move. We have a couple that, you know, they'll get really gung-ho and like start clapping, like Arisha. She'll like get gung-ho and start clapping.
We were speaking to Jeremy from Jumero. I don't know if you're familiar with their work.
Yeah, the drummer is my cousin.
Oh, there you go. 6 degrees of separation. quite recently on the show, earlier this week, and he was saying that they recently performed, or last year performed in Japan and Korea, and said that, you know, I assumed that the Japanese audience would be quite quiet and tame until the end of the song, because I've heard that there's like that level of respect that they want to just give their absolute everything to the artist and they're rather quiet, whereas Koreans would be a bit more active. But he said it was completely the other way around. How do you feel like a local Malaysian Asian audience is similar to, you know, the situation where they're being quiet and respectful, not really getting a rise out of them. Can you explain, you know, a typical Malaysian audience when you're performing?
Well, it depends really on the venue. So like you'll have the slightly more hipstery venues where you have a lot of people, but they'll all be minding their own business. They'll clap when the song's over. The most important thing to do is say thank you when you're done with the song, and some people don't know that the song is done. And some venues, audience is a bit more chatty and interactive. It just really depends on the night and the venue and the level of inebriation.
Sure. I have to say, I'm all for people going out and having a good time, but there's one thing I just can't stand at an event, and that's when people are not even watching what's happening on stage. Like, it's just, I don't know, I just feel like it's totally disrespectful. That person's probably put hours of work into what their set's going to be, or they're performing new songs and no one's giving them that attention. I don't like it.
Well, some acts are boring.
That is true. That is true. So you were saying a little earlier on that you'd actually come to Australia, more specifically Melbourne, and performed fairly recently, right?
Yeah, I did one run in 2011, 10 or 11. That was before the solo EP. It was like after the college band broke up. I had a couple of months, went to Melbourne, did like all the open mics. So like my first solo EP, the green color one, that picture in the front is a Fern Tree Gully.
Ah.
The picture on the back is the beer garden in Brunswick Hotel.
Oh, there you go.
And the picture on the CD is one of the beaches on the Great Ocean Road tour. It was as hipster as can be. It was all Instagram photos.
You're pretty much a Melburnian. Melburnian.
And so Melburnian. I've never heard that word before, but okay, carry on.
So, like, I mean, you weren't here for a particularly long time, but do you feel like the local scene and performing here for people and the different crowds, do you feel like by any way that might have influenced your later work?
Playing in Melbourne really influenced my work in terms of the open mics I run here.
Right.
So, like, we had a couple, but I remember this was the first time when I went over before the solo EP, there was Open Mic Melbourne. There was a website. So I was looking for the website in Malaysia. There wasn't one. So I started openmicmalaysia.org. And I generally run it in a sort of system between the open mics that are done in Melbourne and New York. So you have that sort of walk-in sign-up, but you also have that pre-sign-up. Like there's a guy in Melbourne, the guy that's doing it quite actively now. I think his name's Kevin Murphy.
Okay, yeah.
Irish guy that doesn't drink.
Wow.
Very nice guy.
Unheard of.
Extremely nice guy. He like, when I got there the second time, I think a couple of years back, like, so okay, they're all fully booked, but I tell you what, if anyone pulls out, I'll give you a call and put you right in. I basically play it every night.
Fantastic. And I'm assuming, how long has the Open Mic Malaysia been going for now?
Since 2011, 2012, so about 5 years.
That's incredible. And by the look of it, quite active across the month, right?
Yeah, we have a bi-weekly event in Penang that's run by Jamie of Volatile, another local band.
Right.
In KL, me and Ian run the one at Frontera every Tuesday. It's like this little Mexican restaurant.
Yeah.
And then sporadic ones here and there. So like we just had the barbecue sessions. We have a couple coming up after the fasting month. The main one is the one we run in Sabah, which is once a month, first Sunday. And around that, we built like a couple of different venues. So like if a musician comes to KK for a weekend, even a band, we got a nice string of venues where they don't really pay that much, but it is really fun.
So I guess
you get to drink moonshine.
I guess there's two kind of sides to your work then, isn't there? There's your own work and what you're working on. And then in a way, you're mentoring other up-and-coming artists, right?
It's not mentoring. It's more of
providing
a CSR
the platform.
Project. Yes, more like that.
Have you seen many people having success sort of, you know, because open mic obviously attracts from time, you know, I guess more often than not, you know, really young performers or, you know, people that are new in their musical journey. Have you seen many people sort of starting off on that platform and then growing as an artist and having quite a bit of success later?
Quite a few, actually. Kids that we used to run with back when I was 20, some of them have become quite good pub bands. Like Kaya is a really decent party band. I think Danny also recently came out today. Maha Jeffrey band also. He was a frustrated drummer. And decided to do a solo thing at the open mic, and since then he's become quite a good lead singer.
I guess it's a good platform for people to be able to experiment with something they've got in the back of their mind and give it a go, right?
Yep. I mean, you can be a new kid that just wants to play for the first time, or an old soul that wants to try something new. Everyone is welcome.
Must be a really sort of diverse crowd there. Where to from here for you? Like, obviously this is successful, you'll be keeping Open Mic Malaysia going, but for your music, for your musical journey, what are you working on next?
The step number one, find places to run little open mics all around town. So like back when I was in Sabah, there was nowhere for me to play. We had like this one indie gig thing that happened like once every weekend, but it'll be at this really dingy place where the kids couldn't go.
Sure.
So the first step was to create nice family accessible places where, you know, kids who want to try and all that can play. Second step is to do the same thing, but for bands. So let's say you already came to the open mic, you already made a couple of friends, you now have a band. Now, where can I go and play? So the next step is sort of start like a band circuit throughout Malaysia to make like its own little Chitlin circuit. You don't need to know anyone in particular. You don't need to be a friend of this person. It's just like, if you have the chops, you have 30 minutes, you play there. And from there, then the next step will be like make monthly little festivals, then bi-monthly, you know, then yeah, four times a year, twice a year, but slowly build like a little festival circuit from the ground up. Instead of making a festival with sponsors,
yeah,
do it like the Burning Man way. Small little community. Even Melbourne, if I'm not mistaken, there's that one town outside where it was just like little open mics, eventually go into monthly shows, then eventually go into like once every 3 months, then becomes twice a month, then once a year, all the friends get together and put together a festival. So it's like a real festival.
Pretty amazing. I mean, so many music industries across Asia have had a lot of success. If you look at specifically, and I know we're going down the more pop side here, but Korea, the government of us obviously put a lot of money into marketing K-pop and getting people to notice their music because of the benefits that are there in allowing people to know more about Korea's, you know, society and culture and everything in general. Japan's done the same thing. Even Singapore, like across the causeway, right? Like their government is putting money into things. They've got Noise Project and stuff like that. There's financial backing there, but it doesn't seem like that is happening much at all in Malaysia. It really seems like if you want to get something started or you want to have a platform to do things, you have to start it yourself, right?
It is better when you start it yourself, I feel like. There are the government-sponsored projects all around the world. It's not the same as a bunch of kids with a dream trying to make something happen. Those things last longer. Government funding, I mean, okay, like, it will help for a bit, but then you have someone to answer to. And if you're going to do music and you have someone to answer to, go work in the bank. Because isn't it the whole point to stick it to the man?
Yeah.
How can you ask the man for help?
Exactly. Yeah. There's only so much you can sing about, right?
Yep. Exactly.
Is there anyone on your list that you would really just be dying to do a collaboration with yourself? Like outside of your own music and what you're doing for yourself, like if you could just be dropped on stage with anyone worldwide, you know, who would it be?
I get this question a lot of interviews and honestly, I wouldn't really want to jam with anyone I didn't know because music's a really personal thing. Personally, I feel I already like sort of rub shoulders with good people. So like my guitarist Riz from the Endleaves, he used to play in the Wisconsin-Chicago circuit. So he grew up the same time during Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins and all that. Like I remember he saw Nirvana at Wisconsin just when Dave Grohl joined the band, but they were shit apparently. They were not the best band.
Yeah.
But playing with Riz or like Riz feeling that my music's worthwhile, yeah, investing his time is already nice. And like I was playing bass for a band, Mystery Tapes. That singer was in London during the time of the raves and coming to during the whole Blur Oasis fight off when like Blur and when Damon and Liam were in the bar hustling, he was also hustling for gigs.
Wow.
He likes spending time. It's sort of I already played with the heroes that are within my reach. There's no point of me putting me next to Josh Homme. He'll probably beat me up.
Thank you so much for your time. It's been great getting to know you and I really appreciate you sending your music because we'll be adding it to our Asian Pop Radio library. And woo-hoo! You know, we say diversity is our thing because we want to show our audience that there's a whole heap of good stuff out there and you don't just have to look to the K-pop industry. Please look sometimes somewhere else.
The best way to discover new music is to find a venue close to you, go down and talk to the musicians, and you'll discover things you never knew existed.
That is a good idea. Thanks, guys. If you like what you hear there, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget you can head directly to podomatic.com/Asian Pop Radio, or just head to our website. It's a hub for all things, asianpopradio.com. Follow us on Twitter @AsianPop Radio. Like us on Facebook.